Ooh, hang on. Am I on? I'm on now. Too loud. Is that possible to be too loud? I wonder. Ian's agreeing that I can be too loud. If you've been here so far, we've done two summer Sundays, and despite the fact the football season has begun, we've still got four more summer Sundays to do, including today. Okay? Now, some of you might not even have been here so far this summer Sunday season. That's tricky, that one. Okay, so we're going to do a little bit of a reprise, good word that, reprise, of what we've done so far. Just to remind you, I've got some ways of illustrating it, which hopefully some of you will recall. Now, we're talking about the story of Joseph, which is in the Genesis, which is the first book of the Bible. So we're talking really quite far back at the beginning of the story. Now, we're thinking about Joseph. It's a name that you'll be familiar with because of the musical and so on, but we're looking at what the Bible says happens in this story. There's a few variations, but some of you will already be familiar with that. So we're just going to check out what we already have learnt if you were here. And I could do a little sort of test, but unfortunately, first week wasn't a huge number of us here. But the first week we talked about the fact that Joseph was what? Can anybody remember what this was supposed to illustrate? Who was here? Somebody must have been here. Rebecca. He was 17. Right answer. He was young. Okay. I don't know whether they had Star Wars in those days, but my kids had Star Wars at 17 and a hat, of course. He was only 17. Now, the consequences of that was that he was what like a 17-year-old is. And if you've had a 17-year-old, I'll leave it that to your imagination. The second thing we found out about him, or thought about, was that he had a coat of many colours. Now, you know, so what? I've got a coat at home of many colours, it happens. But what did it symbolise? Can anybody remember what we said it symbolised? Does anybody know what it symbolises?
He was Jacob's favourite.
That coat didn't just represent that was what he wore. That represented that Jacob favoured him above the others. And what was worse was they all knew it. Okay? It was a symbol also of, do you know what? I'm wearing a posh coat. I'm not going to get down with the sheep. Okay? So there was like a double whammy in there. Not only was he not going to, obviously, be a manual worker, and the other guys were going to have to do a lot of the hard work, he was clearly the favourite. And we had something else that we learnt in the first part of it. It's chapter 39 of Genesis. What did the pillow represent? He was a dreamer. Thank you, Duncan. He had a God-given ability that, well, not only to interpret dreams, but he had these dreams that meant something. In the chapter 39, he has two dreams. And when something happens to you twice, when God's speaking to you twice in quick succession, probably means he's trying to tell you something. He had two dreams. Can anybody tell me a little bit about what one of those or both of those dreams was about? Sheaves of corn. Yeah, okay. But what did it actually mean? What did it represent and clearly represent? Yeah, he was going to be, as it were, bowed down to him by others around him. And it was apparent from the dreams that the dreams were that he was going to be bowed down by his brothers in the first one, and then in the second one, by the whole family, and that was significant. The only problem was he made a fatal mistake. He told them. He was 17. Some people think he was arrogant. I just think he was naive. You've heard it. You've heard the people, well, I'm going to be, and you usually laugh, don't you? You know, the person that comes along and tells you I'm going to be prime minister, you laugh. Don't you? You think, well, God might have other plans or whatever. I wonder if you've ever done that. Somebody's told you something and said, actually, I think you might wait and find out that God's got some other plan for you. But this was something God had spoken to Joseph about, and he made the mistake of telling everybody else. So it made him rather unpopular. One day, Joseph's father, Jacob, sent Joseph up the woods, as I would say, what we would say at home, up into obscurity, up away from home, to try and find his brothers. Now, you've got to understand
that when he went to seek his brothers out, there was also a bit of a subtext going on, because Joseph did something else which was a bit silly. He told tales. In fact, he often told his dad what his brothers were up to. Now, that is not a good way of ingratiating yourself with the rest of the family, is it? Telling tales is not a good look, okay? So Joseph had that sort of backstory. His father, suspecting his brothers were up to no good, sent him off to try and find them. Anyway, he did find them, but unfortunately, his brothers see him from afar. Now, there's a bit of a reason why they saw him from afar. What might it be? His coat. You're keeping up. Good. They see him coming, and they decide, do you know what? We've had it. We're barely speaking to him. Dad's all over him. It's just ridiculous. We've had it. Let's kill him. That would solve it, wouldn't it? Doesn't, of course, or it wouldn't. So they see him coming, and one of them has a better idea. He says, no, no, let's not kill him. Let's just keep calm. Let's just throw him in the cistern. And as Rachel helpfully pointed out last week, that's just a posh word for a well. Okay. Fortunately, it was a dry well. Well, just about. It's water, it's okay. They shoved him in this well, and we're going to leave him there. I'm not quite sure what the plan there was, but they shoved him in the well and went and had the tea. The guy that shoved him in the well went up to look after the sheep. The rest of them sat down for their tea. And as I was sitting down to their, I don't know, whatever tea was in those days, bag bowl maybe, I don't know, something like that. They were sat down having their tea, and behold, across the horizon hoved a selection of merchants. And they weren't, the Bible tells us, they weren't just tradesmen. They were merchants. They were the pukka thing. They had the real stuff on board. And they were going to Egypt. Well, one way anyway. That way. We'll say Egypt's that way. That way. Okay? They're going to Egypt. So as I sat there, I say, I know. Let's make a little bit of money out of this. Let's sell him. £20 pieces of silver. What does that remind you of? Let's sell him, get rid of him that way. So they did. And off he went to Egypt with the merchants, who in due turn would sell him, because they didn't really deal in actual people, probably. They sold things like myrrh and balm and all that sort of stuff, expensive spices. So they took Joseph off to Egypt, left them with a bit of a problem. What are we going to say to Dad? The guy who'd put him in the pit came back, panicked, and said, where's he gone? They said, he's gone to Egypt with the merchants. They said, what are we going to do now? We've got his coat. Let's see what we can do with that, just to fool our dad. Yes, his coat mysteriously became splattered in goat's blood. It's actually paint, okay? I didn't slaughter any goats yesterday afternoon, though it was tempting. So they got his coat, ripped it up, splattered it with some goat's blood, and sent it back to Dad. Okay? Sent it back to Dad, and Dad's reaction was probably, well, it says that he couldn't be consoled. He ripped his clothes, couldn't be consoled. And I suspect the brothers thought, this is going to be an interesting outcome, but maybe we just keep calm. It'll all be okay in the end. Meanwhile, in Egypt, whichever way it is. David, could you just get me the flip chart? Thank you. This is one of the points in the story, and there's many, where you can see God's providence. God interacts here at a time, or reacts or acts at a time, when humanly speaking, you're thinking, well, that's amazing. What a coincidence. What a God incidence. God's in control here, because when the merchants got to Egypt, they sold him into the household of a gentleman called, I have an illustration here. This is Potiphar. I hope you can see him. He's on a bit of a white background. Okay. He's the Egyptian who's in charge of Pharaoh's household, right? So he's looking out for young people, or fit young people, fit young men, whatever, fit young women probably as well, to help in the household. So he sees Joseph, and do you know what? He thinks, I'll have him, I'll pay whatever it takes, and I'll have him in my household. Now, of course, Joseph could have been sold to anybody. He could have been sold to anybody. I mean, they may have left him in the pit, but that didn't happen. The merchants arrived on the horizon just at the right time. So Potiphar buys Joseph. And very soon we find out that he starts having quite a big impact on the household. In fact, we learn something else about Joseph. We find out he's an administrator. Not only is he an administrator, he's a very good administrator. And if you're going to be an administrator, a really good place to be is Egypt, because, of course, the Egyptians invented paper. So, of course, the place was full of paper. Administrator paper kind of go together, in those days anyway. And, of course, he was jolly good at it. And he rose to be top man in the household. That was all very good. Apart from, there was a bit of a fly in the ointment. There was a woman on the go, and she was called Potiphar's wife. She falsely accused Joseph of no good. Okay, so first of all, he's slung into a pit by his brothers, and then he's falsely accused of wrongdoing. I mean, he's already a slave, which probably wasn't a great scenario, but he was a respected slave and he was in charge. So suddenly now he's, well, shall we say, just got into trouble by Potiphar's wife. And because she's Potiphar's wife, she's believed, although interestingly, the death penalty probably should have been the outcome of that interaction. But again, God was on the job, and it's quite likely, I suspect, that actually Potiphar thought, oh, she's at it again. Maybe I won't believe it's all Joseph's fault. So, unfortunately, Joseph gets accused falsely, and it's assumed that he did what she alleged. So he gets sent into prison, okay? Slavery was one thing, prison is another. This was more and more desperate. I mean, things were going from bad to worse. So we have pits with, you know, slung into the system by your brothers, sold into slavery, and now he's in prison. But interestingly, it wasn't just any old prison. It was the king's prison. Duh, that's another coincidence, isn't it? God's in control again. So that meant he met two very important people. These two very important people were the wine taster, no wine, and the baker. And they had been accused of probably poisoning the king. Now, this was a very dodgy job. This was the least popular job in the royal household. Why might that be? Anytime Pharaoh got ill, it may have been what he drank or what he ate. Okay? And of course, poisoning was a very, very popular way of getting rid of somebody because it was very hard to prove one way or the other what they ate when. So Joseph was in prison with these two guys. And interestingly, when he started off in the household as a slave, he rose to prominence and was effective and efficient as the leader of the household as a slave. In the prison, pretty much the same thing was happening. And it talks about the prison prospering. I'm not quite sure what that would involve. But same sort of thing happened. And we learned something about Joseph's integrity in that. But while he was in there, he met these two guys, who was the wine taster and the bread baker. And I don't want you to talk too much about that this morning, but it's part of God's providential plan to get Joseph and his family out of Canaan and into Egypt, that he would meet these people who need their dreams interpreting. And do you know what? Joseph had a skill, and that skill was to interpret dreams. So that meant that at the right time and the right place, Joseph could do something that would bring his attention of Pharaoh to him. I'm going to leave it there because I think that's enough for this week, and I want to sort of give you a nice good cliffhanger for what happens next next week. The children are going to go in a minute for to make some, well, I'll tell you what they're going to be making shortly. But I think we're going to sing, are we, again? Or is that the plan? Sorry, apologies to anybody who got that full blast. First of all, Nikki's going to read the scripture to us, okay? She's just going to read chapter 4:39. The whole story that we talked about today actually includes chapter 40. I'm going to leave you to read that for yourself if you wish, but we're going to be focusing mainly on chapter 39.
Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, brought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So he left in Joseph's care everything he had. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now Joseph was well built and handsome, and after a while his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." But he refused. "With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even to be with her. One day he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. She caught him by his cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servants. "Look," she said to them, "this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. When he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." She kept his cloak beside her until his master came home. Then she told him this story. "That Hebrew slave you brought us came to me to make sport of me. But as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." When his master heard the story his wife told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me," he burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warder. So the warder put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warder paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care, because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did.
Thank you, Nikki. Things, as I said, had gone from bad to worse, and then worse still. He was betrayed by his brothers, sold into slavery, and now he's in prison. His father thought he was dead, and his brothers hoped they had got rid of the problem. Pretty grim. I'm not sure that any of us have been through that sort of scenario. But we notice a few things. I just want to bring your attention to a few things that we'll learn in this chapter today. And I think the first thing I'd like to say that, as I've alluded to, the point is that Joseph ended up in Potiphar's house. And if we had the first slide up, the first verses, we read here, didn't we, that the Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him, the Lord gave him success in everything he did. Joseph found favor in his eyes and, next slide, became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household and entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't know whether I would have had Joseph's reaction to that circumstance. He didn't sulk, give up, cry in the corner, although he may have done that sometimes. He may have done those things, and I think all of us facing difficult situations, even if we get to tackling it in a godly fashion ultimately, we may have that moment when we think, I'm not sure I can do this. I'm not sure I can take the right attitude or the right approach to my difficult circumstances. But the Lord was with Joseph. Joseph was in God's plan, even though it didn't look like it. And that sometimes is a very difficult lesson to learn. And sometimes it's not a short or quick lesson necessarily. Joseph's reaction is an example to us. Because not only did he embrace the situation he was in, he brought blessings to others through it. And that's a very interesting point, isn't it? And also, I think that he did the sensible thing from a point of view of surviving, that he decided that he'd put his energies and effort into the circumstances he was in to make, you might say, the best of our job. Or as you might say, if life gives you lemons, you're going to at least try to make something palatable out of it. But there's a bit of a problem, and it's Potiphar's wife. She propositioned him, and his reaction was, and this is a good lesson for us too, he ran. He ran in the opposite direction. He ran away. But she plotted and made sure that nobody was around, so when she arranged for this thing to hopefully happen, that they would go to bed together, when it didn't happen, she made sure that she was going to incriminate him anyway. So Joseph is innocent, but he goes to prison. So then we have another situation, as we've talked about already, where he's not done anything wrong, but life just seems to be falling down around him. Joseph then gets put into prison. As we've already said, it wasn't just any old prison. It was like the exclusive top ranking wing for all the special prisoners. And that meant he met two people in there, which were very crucial to the story. Can we just have the next slide up? Because we read there later in the chapter what happens next when he's in prison. The Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So although, in a sense, rising to be sort of head housekeeper, or, a bit like butler in Downton Abbey, I suppose, being the head person in charge of other staff and so on in the household, now he's in prison. And it must be a much more desperate situation, a more difficult place to be. But the Lord was with him, and he showed him kindness and granted him favour in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. Now, I don't know what being successful in a prison environment means, but Scripture does tell us that through God being with him, he made the best out of that bad situation. And that's a really big challenge to us, isn't it? Even if we believe that God's in our lives and guiding us and with us and has a plan for our lives, how are we going to react when things go wrong or when things don't suit us or things don't seem to be working out as we'd hoped or things are going slow. Remember, Joseph had these dreams initially that we talked about, that he was going to be the person that would be bowed down to by his brothers and his wider family. How far away did that seem at the moment when he was in prison or in the household of Potiphar? It must have seemed miles away. I wonder if he ever thought about it. But the providence, again, of God was with him, and he rose to a place of authority or position or respect in the prison. And he met these two people who he needed to meet, the baker and the wine taster, who would be able to tell later, one of them didn't survive his imprisonment, but one did. The one that did was able at a later time to tell Pharaoh that he knew somebody who could interpret dreams. And that was another crucial point in the story. So what's the one point? We try and have one point in these talks each week during the summer. So I suppose what I want you to think about is the response of Joseph. His integrity and character. This man had grown up from being a naive 17-year-old, and over time had become this man who trusted God, who God could use, and God could be in his circumstances. He chose the right response. Let's face it, as I've said, he could have sulked, he could have kicked up, he could have said, I'm not taking anything to do with this, I'm going to try and escape and perhaps wreak revenge on my brothers. And perhaps actually talk to his father about why he dealt with him with such favouritism that brought such trouble. But scripture says that by his reaction and the way his character was brought to bear upon the circumstances he was in, he brought a blessing to people. Now, I don't know whether you've ever met anybody who's like that. I mean, since I've been here, I've been privileged to meet two people who I'd say fit those categories. And one of them, actually both of them have passed away. But I'm sure some of you remember Betty Bonner, who was here maybe about 10 years since she died. I don't know, I'd have to check that. But Betty was a very fine lady of God. But she was incredibly crippled with arthritis. She could walk, but she was, I don't know any other way to describe it, she was so incredibly crippled with arthritis. But I have to tell you, in all the time I knew Betty, I never heard her complain. It was visibly obvious that she had this problem, this health issue. But what was amazing about it was, if you were blind, or if you spoke to her on the telephone, you would never have known that Betty had that condition that really was so debilitating. And it was like that didn't define her. She wasn't the lady who was very crippled with arthritis. She was Betty, and she was a lovely Christian. And she would pray for you in circumstances, support you. And she had a hilarious sense of humour. She laughed a lot. And everybody loved Betty. Why did people love Betty? Because she wasn't defined by something that could so easily have defined her. The second person I want to refer to is John Scudder, and Heather knows I was going to mention this. Some of you remember Heather's dear husband, John, who died several years ago. Now, John, without a doubt, was a man of integrity. You couldn't get past John with anything that was slightly, shall we say, a grey area. He was definitely a man of integrity. But when we had his funeral here, somebody he worked for many years came and spoke, and it was very interesting. And Heather didn't know this, and obviously none of us knew this. But he spoke about John's integrity, no surprise there. But he also spoke about the fact that wherever John went in the business, whatever he did in the business, actually produced the best returns financially. John was a walking example of this, walking in integrity, but bringing God's blessing onto his business. And I don't even know whether he actually ever told John, but apparently each year, John's returns as a farm salesman were the best in the company. It was as if God's blessing was on John in such a way as to bring a blessing on others around him. So perhaps this today, if you want to take away that thought, you might want to be thinking, am I bringing blessing on those around me? Maybe it's two thoughts. Am I bringing integrity to the job that I'm in, the circumstances I'm in? Don't have to be in work to be
walking in integrity. It can affect where you are, in your home, in your neighbourhood, people you deal with, at the gym, at school, wherever it may be, are you walking in integrity? And secondly, are you bringing a blessing on those around you? The title is today was When Life Gives You Lemons, Are You Going to Make Lemonade? And that's the challenge sometimes, isn't it? When we have difficult circumstances, by the grace of God, are we going to make it something much, much better?